You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Go Wild. Go Wild is the fastest growing social media app for the outdoor enthusiasts. Whether you hunt, fish, hike, or camp, Go Wild has a feature for you. You can visit timetogowild.com for more information or visit your Google App Store on your mobile device and download the Go Wild app. Let's get outside. It's time to go wild.
Welcome to the Backcountry Rookies Podcast. You may be a little more familiar with this podcast under the name Rookies in the Backcountry. So I had to, well, I didn't have to, but I decided to change the name from the Rookies in the Backcountry over to Backcountry Rookies. All of my social media, my website, everything that I had other than the podcast is called Backcountry Rookies. So to make this podcast a little bit more searchable, a little bit easier, a little bit less confusing, I'm changing the name over to Backcountry Rookies. Hopefully that's not too big of a deal. I think after a couple episodes, it'll work itself out and then everything will be in line. Dan over at the Sportsman's Nation Network is working hard to switch over all the old names and make it searchable so that when you search for Backcountry Rookies, it'll come up and all of the podcasts will show up, not just the new ones that are titled Backcountry Rookies. So anyway, hopefully it's not too confusing, and I think it's really going to streamline everything. It's certainly going to be easier for me, and that I mean, that's a good thing for me. Hopefully it's good for everybody else. So stick with it. We're still the same great content, same great guests. Everything is the same. It's just a different name and a different logo. So with that out of the way, this podcast that we're doing today is a really great show. I have on two great guests, Chase and Kevin from the Mountain Project. I want to apologize up front because the audio is not perfect. It's not terrible. It just sounds a little bit like we're recording it inside of a tin can or something like that. Just sounds a little bit off. The reason for that is I had to do some computer upgrades. Had a problem with my old computer. The program that I was using to record started having trouble, and basically I just started having a lot of problems. So I upgraded computers, upgraded microphones, made a few changes. However, in the meantime, I was recording a few episodes on my cell phone. So from this show on, it should be back to really good quality audio. It was just two that I had to do that with the cell phone. I wasn't super happy with the way that they turned out, but good content, good show. Fine to listen to. Just sounds a little bit like we're recording in a tin can. So stick with it. Listen to this one all the way through. It's a really, really good show. And Chase and Kevin get a chance to talk about a sheep hunt they did up in Northwest Territory. And their stories are just great. So stay tuned and listen to that. Also, my giveaway that I'm doing, I'm going to talk more about the giveaway at the end of the show. I talk about it at the first all the time, but I've already burned up 3 minutes of your time telling you about the audio and the name change. So more to follow at the end about the giveaway. I will say up front, I just started a Backcountry Rookies YouTube channel, and the first video that I posted is all about the giveaway, and I go over the gifts and the prizes rather, and I have each one with me, and you get to see each one. So, and I talk about some of the rules. If you want to know more about the rules, go to backcountryrookies.com and you'll be able to read all about the rules and the gifts, and there's links to all of the gifts and all that stuff. So check it out over there, or just stay tuned in the end and I'll talk about it a little bit more. So with all of that said, I think I'm ready to roll into the show. Like I said, Chase and Kevin from Mountain Project, they're a YouTube media production group that puts out fantastic YouTube content. So check these guys out and listen to the show.
Today is a show that I've been waiting a long time to record, and these guys have been really, really patient with me on getting this set up. I think we've tried a few times to get it recorded and schedules don't match or just problems come up. So today we have Chase Christopher and Kevin Passmore from Mountain Project. If you haven't seen the Mountain Project, you need to jump over on YouTube and look at these guys. They have a lot of really awesome content, great hunts. They record everything. There's just a really good team of guys over there, guys and gals, and they're all just recording really, really good hunts and really good stuff. So today we're going to get to talk to Jason and Kevin and really kind of pick their brain apart about how do they plan and prep for these hunts, because there's a lot that goes into it, just not only hunting, but videoing and editing and everything that comes along with trying to put stuff on YouTube. So with that being said, I don't want to steal any of their thunder for sure, so I'm going to let Chase and Kevin introduce themselves, and then we'll really dig into where did the mountain project come from and some of their previous YouTube stuff that they've done. And then one thing I'm really looking forward to hearing about is coming up in season 5. They have a sheep hunt that they did, and it looked like a really epic adventure. So looking forward to hearing about that. With all that intro stuff out of the way, I'll let you guys introduce yourself and just talk just briefly about your hunting background. So Chase, why don't you go first and talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, good morning, Chad. Thanks for having us on, and good to be here. Chase Christopher, and I grew up in a small town, and actually didn't start hunting until I was 15 years old. So my uncles kind of showed me the ropes a little bit, and then a lot of it was self-taught through high school. I just borrowed one of his rifles for one of my uncle's rifles for the first time. It was all downhill from there. Carried a camera with me since day one, and always enjoyed that aspect of it, filming and taking pictures along the way and whatnot, and just kind of escalated into what we do now, the mountain project. I won't bore you with all the stuff in between, but now I'm a family man. I got a wife and 3 kids and a job as a lineman for the power company here, and do the mountain project on the side, and as much free time as I can. So that's pretty much my background on it.
Okay. Good deal. Kevin, how about you?
Yeah, thanks, Chad, again. Kevin Passmore. I was born and raised here in Arizona, up by Prescott, in a little town called Mara. Was raised in a hunting family from day one, pretty much. My dad's side of the family was always into hunting and filling the freezers, so yeah, I was kind of lucky from the very get-go, even got pictures and before I was a year old out on hunts and whatnot. So been in it from day one, and then probably when I was 13 or 14, I got my mom's old camera and just started carrying it. Never got into the technical side, kind of like Chase and Jay are. Just really enjoyed filming and, just trying to document it just so I can have it forever. Yeah, love it. Do it every minute that we can. And I got a wife and 2 kids. Been married for 6 years. Met Brittany 10 years ago. We got 2 kids. 4 and 6, 1 and a girl. And then I'm also a lineman here for the power company here in Prescott. And it's kind of how me and Chase met through social media and our jobs, and then moved on to hunting. So, yeah, enjoy it.
Yeah, really cool. So what takes up more of your guys' time, being on the line or mountain project?
That's a tough one. Probably work.
Yeah.
Sure is.
There's absolutely no free time. Now, you understand, because we've been trying to set this up for a while, but, it kind of bounces back and forth. But like Kevin said, I think work takes up the majority of it, and then, family and hunting are right there neck and neck.
Yeah. You guys must have really, really patient and understanding family, too. So that's a huge part of the support plan when it comes to this kind of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we have been trying to set this up for a while, and I'm glad that we finally got it to come together. I would send Chase text messages and say, are you available this weekend to record? And you know, I'm off to Utah or I'm off to New Mexico or we're doing this or we're doing this. Like every free moment that you guys have available seems like it's occupied by working, traveling, or hunting something family related. So.
Right. I think we tried to do it a couple, you know, afternoons and it seems like work kind of messed that up a little bit, which happens a lot with our jobs as well.
Yeah. Yep. Well, so moving on from that, thanks for introducing yourself a little bit. I think that'll kind of help people understand a little bit more who we're talking to. I think it's really cool that you guys have the and maybe it wasn't foresight, I don't know, we'll call it foresight, but just start carrying the cameras around when you were young and realizing that you were going to be able to, you know, video some of these hunts. And I think that's pretty neat to be able to think about that back then. Have you ever thought about trying to dig up any of that old video and make some sort of YouTube video from it?
Yeah, we actually started this series a few months ago called Throwback Thursday, and our goal is to dig up. Kevin and I have a lot of old videos, and our goal is to dig some of that up and hopefully start sharing more of it. You know, it's finding time to edit it, and I had to get on eBay and buy a couple old cameras because all the old cameras I have are broken. So I'm trying to find a way to get those tapes recorded, you know, onto my computer and a hard drive, and that way we can edit them. But absolutely, we want to share some of that old stuff and something we've been working on for a little bit now. And I'm sure check out the YouTube page. We'll eventually get some of it on there.
So I think, Chase, I'll address this question to you because I'm not sure. I know you were in Mountain Project from the beginning. So where did the Mountain Project idea come from?
So Jay Park and I, 5 years ago, I met up with Jay. He was going to start a small film tour that was localized here in Arizona. There's a few of us, you know, myself and Kevin and other people that have always carried a camera, and we've always made either some kind of like YouTube video or just something online. And Jay, he was the manager of a sporting goods store in Southern Arizona, and he reached out and was trying to put this little film tour together and travel around Arizona and just rent out a movie theater or whatever he could to highlight some of these hunting videos that guys were making. And I ended up, I was working in the town that he was working in, and we met up and started talking about that idea, and then, you know, that idea just kept growing. And the original Mountain Project was going to be five different hunts, five different species, five different locations, and we were going to make a big documentary film, something, you know, like hour and a half, 2 hours long type deal where you bounce back and forth between these five big epic hunts. And we quickly realized into the first season, which was 2013, that it wasn't going to work out that easy. We were, you know, big dreams of making that happen, but budget and vacation time and other things, you know, just didn't work out. So we ended up, you know, filming a couple hunts and then just making separate films out of those. And Jay's always been really good in the edit room. And, you know, it seemed like one of our first films, we had a goose deer film called Close, Jay's goose deer hunt, and then had my elk hunt, which was called Flooded. And anyway, those seemed to go over well with the small audience we had, and just started building on that, making a few separate films per year, and you know, just kind of adapted to, you know, what we had time for with our jobs and our families, and what we had time for as far as making films. And so yeah, back in 2013, Jay and I started it like that, and, you know, for a few years there, we would release 2 to 4 films a, a year, and then it's just moved on to last year and what we did with our daily videos. So that's kind of the background where the mountain project started, and then just a little over a year ago, I guess, we had talked to, Kevin and I have known each other for a while, or about 3 years now, a little over, and ended up bringing him and Brittany on, and another buddy of ours, Sam, and just kind of trying to grow the Mountain Project family a little bit and get a little more content out there for everyone. And just kind of turned into what we did last year, season 4.
I think I've watched about every episode on there. I had a little spare time when I was down in Honduras, so I spent a lot of time on YouTube, and season 4 certainly caught my eye. And then some of those early films that you talked about, Close and Flooded, and there was another one I thought was really cool too. I think it's called Way Up, Way Down. That was an elk hunt. That was really pretty cool. And then there was I don't remember the name of it, but there was a film you guys did with Cameron Haynes too that was a pretty good one.
Yeah, the tribute with Roy Roth, right. Cameron Haynes. Mm-hmm.
So in season 4, you guys hunted all kinds of stuff. You hunted elk, all that sheep, Kodiak, goats, mule deer, just a little bit of everything. And this is kind of what leads me to the one I was talking about, the planning and preparation part earlier. So when you guys started, when did the idea of season 4 come about, and when did you guys start planning for that?
No, I'll be honest with you, season 4 just kind of happened between hunting season and the editing room. And we were going into season 4 filming it like normal, where we would just go in and make a film of each hunt, which last year with Kevin and Brittany and everybody, it would have been quite a few films. But as we migrated back to YouTube, or to YouTube, it seems like the YouTube audience wants more. They want to see everything. They don't want you chopping it all up and leaving things out. So with the success of other people kind of doing the daily video thing on YouTube, not just in the hunting industry, but just all around, we all kind of sat down and chatted between, after the season, after all of our hunts were done, and we were like, instead of taking a couple hours of video and chopping it down to a 8 to 10 minute film, why don't we just put that whole, 2 hours of video out there and let everybody see it? And so that's kind of, is interesting. We there's still a lot of planning and preparation going into it to all these hunts, but crazy enough, just the way it turned out into this daily series, into season 4, and the response we had from it, it was all great. So we actually planned this upcoming season and the hunting we're doing right now to do the daily videos instead of separate films. So that's, to be honest, it season 4, there was still planning going on, but it wasn't planning daily videos. It kind of happened last minute, so.
It did seem like YouTube took a big turn last year with that daily video, even if they were just 5 minute videos or 30, 45, 50 minute videos, whatever they are. That was a big push last year, and it was kind of neat to see, is that you can see that daily grind that everybody goes through when they're out on a hunt. So.
For sure, and it keeps it real.
Yeah. So Kevin, this season 4 was your first year with the Mountain Project hunting. How did you like getting involved with it, and what hunts were you involved with during season 4?
Yeah, shoot, how many hunts? Me and Chase, last year was kind of the first year me and Chase, the year before that we put in together for a couple hunts and had a couple hunts, but, like you guys are talking about, people want to see everything, and we didn't quite, I had a couple struggles and we quite didn't film a bunch of it. So a bunch of that stuff kind of got left out. But and then moving into season four, you know, with the new mindset and talk, and then, you know, you learn from the year before, you learn, you know, people want to see that, people want to relate to that. So, last year we did, me and Chase did an elk hunt and a mule deer hunt in New Mexico, and, shoot, it's almost kind of a blur because of how much stuff we've been doing. But no, I really enjoyed it. I really liked how it turned out. It's a lot of work, and people don't realize last year people were really understanding that's all we did was hunt and, YouTube and just travel around. And once we started putting everything out, people started really seeing how everyone related, could relate with us. And, you know, we had families and jobs and, you know, how busy we were, but we still mixed in a bunch of hunts and we got it all on film, and it was good. I really enjoyed it.
And you make a good point there too about the families and the job and the work and stuff. And I follow you on Instagram, and I think that you really do a good job of putting that sort of how all that comes together. You do a good job of that on your story, because there might be a story, you know, a little 15-minute video and you sitting down at the table with your family, and then the next one is just 2 o'clock in the morning and you guys are out on a work call getting something done, you know, work related. And then the next story is driving down the road to go hunt somewhere, and then it's you guys out hunting.
That's our life.
Yeah, right. So it's just constant. And I know I was talking to Chase on the phone the other day, and it was, I think he said, I don't remember what day we talked, but he said Friday you guys were getting off of work, jumping in the truck. The trucks were already loaded, and you were headed out to, I believe it was New Mexico, and then coming straight back in the basically just driving home, unloading, and going straight back to work. So there's a level of dedication there that comes from you guys that I think is pretty incredible.
Yeah, a lot of stuff goes down when our families all close at night. A lot of stuff goes down because we don't miss time with them, and it's either work or, you know, making some videos or driving and trying to get every minute out of every day. It's tough, but we enjoy it.
Sometimes we don't sleep as much as we should.
Yeah, sure. Like last night.
Yeah.
For everybody listening, I was up early this morning, but I'm a couple hours ahead of these guys. They were up. Right now it's about 4:30 in the morning where they're at, so we're getting this done nice and early.
Yeah, I think Kevin and I were on the phone. He was deer hunting last night. We were on the phone about 9:45 last night.
Yeah.
Wow. And unfortunately, I'm starting to see that a little bit too with this podcast and website and stuff coming around. It does take a lot of time. I find myself waking up earlier, going to bed a little bit later just to make sure stuff gets done. But that's part of it, right? That's what you got to do. So.
Yep.
So for each individual hunt that you guys do, and this kind of leads into drawing tags and just everything that goes with it in the off season. Is there a planning or anything that goes into your drawing of your tags? Like who's going to put in for what? Does everybody just put in for everything? And you get what you get, and then you guys build your hunting plans off of that.
It's kind of a mixture. We definitely sit down and, you know, we build a base off of, like Chase has been, in the North Country the last couple of years. So that's, you know, typically August and September. So you kind of have the known hunts, odd ad hunting the last couple of years. We've had a couple hunts that we knew, so then we start with that, and then it's pretty much, we just want tags. We don't mind the tags that no one else wants. We'll work harder and still be successful, so we'll make sure to get on and look at some draws, and points, and then just kind of start. I mean, when the regs come out
It seems like me and Chase are on the phone 24/7, just planning and scheming, trying to find a tag to go on, and we'll do whatever it takes. It's just a lot of talk, and then like this year, we knew we were headed to the Northwest Territories. So there was a bunch of hunts that we couldn't put in for, but we knew there was a bunch of hunts that we were really good chance of drawing, and it just so happens, I mean, it's been weekend after weekend after weekend, and I think we got, Chase has one. I'm done for the season, but Chase has one more tag coming up, but, it's a game, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Like Kevin said, a lot of planning into that preseason, and you know, we want to have a couple tags each, and a lot of our tags are most of the tags we put in for, other than Odd Dad and stuff, are public land, you know, draw tags that anybody can draw. We also hunt some over-the-counter stuff here in Arizona, over-the-counter deer, and then javelina tags are pretty much a given. Kevin and Brittany pretty much know everything there is to know about javelina hunting, and, but there's, you know, Arizona elk tags are hard to come by, so it's hard to plan on those. And then New Mexico is a different story. You know, there's hard tags to get and there's easier tags to get. And we tend to go for those easier tags, which are much harder hunts. But it gives us something to do. And New Mexico is our next door neighbor here, so it's not too far of a drive for us. And so, yeah, we like Kevin said, we talk on the phone a lot before application season, and then we spread it out. You know, we like to hunt with everything. We've got mostly rifle and muzzleloader hunts this year, but you know, we apply for archery hunts too. A lot of times, it's harder to get archery hunts in the Southwest because those seasons are during the rut, and people really want those hunts, and people want the rifle hunts less. So, you know, we end up drawing a second or third choice rifle hunt and, just getting a tag and going hunting. So that's kind of the goal. I mean, whether it's one of our own tags or, you know, a friend or family or somebody, we're always out there with cameras.
And I think a big thing we changed, last year, me and Chase started putting in together, you know, finding hunts that we could put in together and draw. Just in so we can take turns either driving. We know we have someone else that's going to be there. And not, you know, it's always typical. You draw a tag, you got five friends that are like, oh yeah, I'm excited, I'll be there. And then 2 days before the hunt, they back out. Well, me and Chase started talking. So you know what? We put in together, draw together. We got to be there. And, you know, no excuses. Well, it's a good excuse. Well, I got a tag too. So yeah. That's helped out a lot. Being able to help film and pack stuff out and whatnot, so.
That's a good plan. I like that. So then as far as filming and editing and equipment and stuff, what do you guys take with you for your camera gear when you go out?
A little bit of everything. We've got cameras attached, you know, everywhere from, you know, the small stuff, we typically attach a GoPro to one of our trekking poles, and then we have a little Sony point-and-shoot that we carry in our bino harness. Our bino harnesses have little rangefinder pouches, and we carry a little point-and-shoot camera, which takes great photos and video both. And then, you know, between Kevin and Jay and Sam and I, we have mirrorless cameras and actual just camcorders, and yeah, most of the time our packs are about twice as heavy as they should be with all the batteries and camera gear we have.
I bet that's a lot of extra stuff to lug around and carry around.
Mm-hmm.
What, if looking back, and maybe you don't remember because you guys have done so much in between season four and where you're at now, but what was your favorite hunt? Chase, I'll ask you first. What was your favorite hunt from season 4?
Oh, man, that's a tough question. I go back and forth. One of my favorite hunts last year, they were all, equally awesome, but we went over to New Mexico, and Kevin and I had mule deer tags in the new area, and ended up shooting two really nice mule deer, and it was, you know, the weather was right, it was cold, we actually got a tiny bit of snow on that hunt, and it was the first mule deer I've ever shot, and then Kevin was able to take home his biggest mule deer, and that was probably, I mean, Alaska is, it's hard to top the North Country, but taking home my first mule deer was a pretty cool experience.
Was that with a rifle or a bow?
Rifle.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Cool. How about you, Kevin?
Yeah, like Chase said, that's a really hard one because, what was cool about season four, like Chase said, is we didn't leave anything out. And throughout all the videos, all you can see, you're smiling, you have good times, there's good people, surrounded by good people, it's nothing but good times, so it's really, I knew he was going to stay in New Mexico because I wanted to stay in New Mexico a little bit, but it was, every trip last year was a blast. I actually, last year was kind of a pain in the butt. I had some truck issues, and we still killed a couple great bulls, but I think I would probably, it wasn't season four, but it was during the spring, but my wife threw a bison tag in. It was on once in a lifetime tag, and we only got to hunt one day, but me, her, and her father went up there, and she killed a big bull on her first day of hunting spot and stock, so that was probably really cool. That was the first once in a lifetime tag for my family or anything I've really been a part of. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I thought that would maybe be what you said. That was a pretty neat hunt. I watched that one also. That was pretty cool. Buffalo is a really awesome animal. I'm sure you're probably still eating on that thing. They're massive.
Yep. Oh yeah. I think we took like 400 pounds of meat to the processor, which was, I mean, in the video you see what we left. We left the pelvic bone and the spine, but those animals, it's unreal.
Unreal how big they are. Yeah, I had the chance to kill one a few years back, and I was absolutely blown away when we walked up to that thing and started trying to skin it out. I was lucky enough that there was a backhoe nearby. And they came over and they hooked onto it with the backhoe and lifted it off the ground. And it was, that backhoe was completely maxed out with the bucket all the way up, and that thing was, the front legs were still touching the ground.
Right.
Yeah, it was just massive. So over the years, how about lessons learned? If you could each give a couple real quick, that's just something that you've learned that just changed the game for you. Kevin, how about you?
My patience for sure. These tags were drawn or public, everything's public land, like Chase said, well, besides the odd ad tags, but any of the Western stuff, it's public land. I used to get really discouraged. I was actually just talking, with my cousin last night about it because our mule deer hunts are going on in Arizona right now. We killed a pretty good buck last night, and other hunters and everything, man, I'd get discouraged and just shut down and want to leave. I would leave and change everything up, but I've really, the last probably 4 or 5 years, I've really learned more patience and like talking with other hunters. And, people, so you pull up, someone's there talking with them and picking their brain what they're going to do and like working with them instead of just shutting down and, walking over them or anything like that. But it's amazing when you get out and actually don't worry about all the other people, how much fun and how much wildlife you can see that they're not seeing. If you just relax and really stick behind the glass, I've really changed to where I work with people a lot more and not just get frustrated and leave. And it's been beneficial. All the tags we draw and everything, it just makes public land hunting that much more fun.
Yeah, for sure. I would agree with Kevin there. Just, that's one big thing, is just learning to work harder, to just stay out there and keep your head in the glass and just learning a lot of animal movements on public ground. And another couple things is just you know, gear selection and what we take on these hunts. You know, there's over the years, you know, some of these first hunts might have packed half the house in the back of the truck trying to figure out what to use and whatnot. Now we kind of have it down to a system with these quick weekend hunts we do and some of these things we do. We just have the gear that we know we're going to use and toss it in and go. And then, another thing is just learning how to apply for different hunts in different areas. You know, every state has a different system. And, I think, you know, learning what to do and what not to do in that situation and when you go to apply has been a big learning curve for me.
I totally agree. And last year was my first year of trying to figure out the big game hunting, you know, Western hunting. And that was almost, well, it was overwhelming to me. Not almost, but it absolutely was. Trying to figure out what state, how to apply, the rules, just everything that goes along with it was. And that's a tough one to try to figure out because every state is a different nut to crack. It's so difficult. And I ended up just taking the easy way out and doing over-the-counter Colorado. I think there's probably opportunities that I'm missing
There's nothing easy about that one for sure.
Well, I mean, no, not the hunt itself, but
yeah.
As far as buying the tag, you know, you drive up, I walked into Walmart, bought a tag, and then I was in the woods and it was done. And I wasn't worried about anything in March or April or you know, whenever the draw season was. And it's that draw, I think, that's difficult.
That's true. Very true.
Yeah. So Arizona is a place that I really, really want to hunt. And last year I started really digging into it on how to, trying to figure out their draw system and their point system. I bought a couple of points and, you know, I'm going to start adding them up a little bit out there until I put in for stuff. But, every state, you're right, every state is so different in just kind of how it plays out. I'm super anxious to hear about your sheep hunt. I just wanted to learn a little bit more about that, the background and stuff. And, you know, season four and sort of where it came from. I'm sorry, I missed a question here that I was going to ask. For season five, what other hunts do you guys have lined up? What are we going to see besides the sheep hunt?
Oh, man.
Plus you.
Yeah.
It starts so far. Starts with the sheep hunt, and then what does it move on to next after that, Kevin?
From the sheep hunt, we went straight to, we went back to New Mexico with our mule deer tags, I think the weekend after we got back.
In between there, Jay went on that hunt for heroes. So Jay had an early archery elk tag here in Arizona and ended up, point guarding and turning it over to, Hunt for Heroes, and Jay went and filmed that one. And then he also filmed our buddy Jim Graham on a muzzleloader antelope hunt. And then, yeah, that's when we dove into Kevin and I's mule deer hunt.
Yeah, we went to New Mexico mule deer, and then I ended up bouncing down to Southern Arizona 2-0. Muzzleloader tag.
And I went up to Utah, rifle mule.
And then we bounced back to New Mexico on our elk tag.
And that's where we're at right now, pretty much.
That's a good thing, but there's so many good hunts that you lose track of them, right?
It got to the point where one weekend, I forget what I was doing, I was cleaning up my stuff, and my wife walked out, and she's like, well, why are you unpacking? You just got to pack it again for next weekend. And I'm like, well, what do you mean? And she's like, well, your deer hunt's next week. And it was like, holy cow, I called Chase. It's like, man, these things weekend after weekend are gonna kill us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man, that's tough. It's fun, and but I'm sure it's tough. Anyway, yeah. Dedication and sticking to it. That's good. Okay, so as far as the sheep hunt goes, there's a lot of stuff that I'd like to know about this thing. So where did you guys go for your sheep hunt?
We went to Arctic Red River Outfitters, which is in the Northwest Territories. it kind of started a few years ago. My buddy Cody Vormans and I, we booked that hunt and had been planning on it, and Cody actually took a last minute, oh, just, you can find this one on season 4, actually. He took a last minute cancellation hunt with Arctic Red and, turned our hunt into, you know, was it going to happen or not? It was always going to happen for me, but he didn't know if he could make it happen. And right away, without hesitation, I gave Kevin a call. I said, hey, can't say no to this. We're going sheep hunting. And Kevin, he jumped on board right away. So, yeah, it's something we have been planning for, or I've been planning for a few years. And Kevin, he didn't have quite as long to plan, but he definitely jumped on board and we made it happen for him in short notice.
So Kevin, what was short notice for you?
So right after Cody's hunt, I want to say he was in the end of August. I want to say right around October, Chase had called me when Cody was there, but he kind of gave me a heads up and he's like, you know, it might not be for sure. We got to find out, but there's a good chance. And then I want to say it was around October, November, Cody made his mind up that he wasn't going to return. And then I actually told Chase no, at first. I didn't want to, but just something out of my world that I've never even envisioned feeling. My wife was actually the main push that was like, no, we'll make it work. We're going to do this and you're going to get up there. So I had probably, it was less than a year, to prepare, and Chase had been, like you said, for a couple years. But yeah, my wife was the main guy in that one for getting me up there. And yeah, it was awesome for her to do that.
So how many days was the hunt?
15. 15 days in the field. We were actually in the field for 17 days, but the actual hunt, the way Travis does it is you get dropped off. That's not counted as a hunting day as long as the weather permitting and everything. And then you gotta wait 12 hours, before you can hunt. You get 15 days in the field, to hunt.
And for Kevin and I, that group of hunters, you know, I think there were 5 or 6 sheep hunters then. Kevin and I were the first ones in the field and the last ones out of the field, which is cool.
Wow. So is that overwhelming to get out there and land in that country and just look around? It's gotta be incredible.
Yeah, when that plane, when you get dropped off, I mean, flying in, it was all overwhelming, but flying in from Norman Wells to base camp, you get to see, you know, it was like an hour plane ride, and then we jump in another plane. And we actually took a float plane from Nolan Wells to base camp, and then from base camp to the field, we dropped off another hunter, and then flew even further to their very southern end of their concession. And then when you get dropped off, and then you watch that plane take off, then it was like, holy crap. It's like, I have no clue where I am, but I know I'm out in the middle of nowhere. And that was... It's definitely overwhelming knowing that you're there. You're in it.
Yeah, there's something about the feeling when that bush plane leaves you, when it drops you off and you just hear it disappear in the distance. I don't know what that feeling, it's hard to explain, but it's definitely a feeling of you're out there now and there's no turning back.
I wanted to ask about the logistics of it, and you touched on it a little bit, but so what's the process from Arizona to that bush plane leaving? How many flights do you take, and how did you get there?
Was it 6 flights?
Yeah,
we had commercial flights from Phoenix to Seattle to Edmonton, and then we do a little customs, gun check and everything else in Edmonton, Canada, Alberta. And, we had an overnight in Alberta, got a hotel room there, or in Edmonton, I'm sorry. And then the next morning we got up early and we flew from Edmonton to Yellowknife and from Yellowknife to Norman Wells. And then we had another overnight in Norman Wells. And then we flew to base camp the next morning and, like Kevin said, from base camp to the field. So quite a few flights. Yeah. It was, you know,
so the whole thing's like about 3 weeks long to get in and get out and do the hunt.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a couple of days of travel on each side of it for sure.
Yeah. It was 21 days total is what we were gone.
Wow. And then when you do that, as far as food and gear, did they do drops for you guys?
Yeah. Yeah, they, you know, everything up there is weather permitting because it changes so fast. And, on a 15-day hunt, on their 10-day hunt, we talked to a couple hunters and they, I think they packed all 10 days or 11 days, whatever they ended up taking. But for our trip, Tavis had told us that he would try and do a mid-hunt drop, or if we knocked something down and they came in to pick up the meat, he would bring the drop, and that's kind of how it worked out. I think we ended up taking 8 days of food, planning on like a day 7 or 8, drop. And then, it just worked out to where I killed my ram and he came in on day 5, I think. And so we got our food early. Our packs were a lot heavier than anticipating.
So that when you, do they set up like a base camp wherever the bush plane comes in and you set a camp and leave stuff there to eliminate some of that weight, or is it you're packing everything all day, every day, every mile? How's that work?
We moved camp almost every day. There was a couple camps we stayed 2 nights at, but the name of the game on that is if you're not seeing sheep, you just pack up your bag and you keep moving. So there was no, like, I mean, we had a base camp, like I said, a couple of times to where we would go hunt a drainage. We'd set up our tents. We'd go hunt a drainage all day long, come back and sleep in the same place. But, you know, the point of it all is to just keep staying mobile and keep finding new sheep until you find that mature ram.
And do you know how many miles you covered? How much ground you covered over the 14 days?
Was it, Kevin, a little over 100?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. And that's not just flat ground, right? That's up and down and up and down.
Oh, a lot of elevation gain and loss. It was, yeah. The most I've hiked in that period of time. And most of the time, I would say minimum, you know, I bet we averaged 50-pound packs. You know, sometimes a lot heavier when you're moving camp, but and sometimes lighter when you're just day hunting. But averaging over that many miles, averaging about 50 pounds on your back.
Yeah, moving when we had camp and food, we were probably 75 pounds. And then we carried my ram for two different trips to get to an airstrip. I bet we were pushing right at 100.
Yeah, if not a little more.
Yeah.
Incredible. And then was it right? Did you guys hunt with rifles?
Yeah. We took a bow with us. We took a bow and, we actually set up a carbon PSV bow that fit both of us and we were both shooting the same and, really hoping to get a chance to stalk in with the bow, but it was, you know, the sheep were still way up in the shale rock and the nasty stuff, and which proved to be difficult stalking in on them. So we both took them with our rifles.
Now, I wanted to ask if you guys had to get up into any of that shale or any of that rock face climbing around. I'm sure you did if you harvested something.
Yep, yeah, for sure. We were up there. We took some pretty good hikes trying to locate some rams. We had some pretty bad weather, a lot of bad weather, actually. I think we had out of the 17 days, I think 4 or 5 were decent days. The rest of them were some kind of moisture, wind, or fog. But, yeah, we took some hikes that, you know, I envisioned going up there and sheep hunting, being on some ridges that looked like a like a knife blade, you know, just steep on both sides. And we dang sure got up in there in some of that country. It's amazing. Actually, really amazing.
So that's what I'm imagining right now. So starting to talk through it, that's what I'm imagining. So, man, that's got to be rough.
Yeah, you can glass up some of those ewes and lambs and stuff in some, you know, less steep terrain and, you know, a little more grass or willows or whatever cover. But it seems like those rams just want to live in the nastiest stuff you can find. And, you know, we had some weather. We had snow come in several times. And, I mean, the mountains were pretty much white over half the time we were there. And they said the rams would move down lower with that, but they didn't. You know, they stuck up high in the snow, which made it difficult to find them and difficult to hunt them.
Well, that leads me to, you mentioned weather a few times, so that leads me into some gear questions. Is I was curious, coming from Arizona and hunting Arizona, New Mexico, what kind of changes did you have to make to your kit or any gear in particular to go up there and hunt? And as you probably both have changes, so I'll, Chase, if you want to go first.
Yeah, you know, Kevin earlier talked about application time and how much we spend on the phone, like between the two of us when we're trying to apply for hunts. We'll multiply that by about 10. That's how our gear selection and our gear prep went down. we were talking constantly on, all right, you're going to carry this, and then I'll take this, and we're going to split this, and you know, what do we need to do here? There was so much of that conversation going down. And, we ended up narrowing down our gear to a good system. And, it actually worked out really great for the both of us.
Was there any piece of gear that proved to be crucial up there that you just, if you wouldn't have had it, it could have ended the hunt?
Oh man. It all kind of works. It all works together, but
it's hard to go on a hunt like that. And you talk to everybody, and the big thing everyone talks about is, "Oh, I had wet feet, or my rain gear failed me, or this failed me." And it's hard to answer a question like that because we did so much research and so much work and thought into this, and we never had wet feet. Our rain gear never failed us. We never got cold. We slept dry. I mean, not one piece of gear failed us, so it literally worked out. You couldn't have asked for any better gear system than what we took.
I'd say if you're asking about, you know, some of the more important, you know, they all work together, but I think a good pair of boots is crucial. A tent, like your sleep system, you know, being comfortable at night is really important. And being comfortable during the day with the clothes you wear. But, for sure, I mean, you can go back and forth on all of it. You know, the rifle, you gotta have a good rifle up there and know where you're gonna shoot. I mean, your optics. I'd say boots. I'm just gonna stick with boots on the most important.
Yeah. And I would ask you what kind, but the people are so different and everybody's feet are so different that it's just hard to say. But I guess I will ask you, what kind of boots did you have on?
The La Sportiva, the Trango Cubes.
Okay.
We both use those.
Yep. Okay. It's actually an uninsulated boot. A buddy of ours, got us in them and they were amazing.
Yeah, it's all synthetic boot, and, you know, I've been on hunts up north before, and like my sheep hunt last year, or Jay's sheep hunt, I had a pair of boots on that my feet stayed pretty wet, and it was, you know, definitely, it takes away from it a little bit when you're trying to dry your feet all the time, and, those synthetic boots we used this year kept us dry, and they're really nice. But like you said earlier, everyone's different, everyone's foot's different, so that's our buddy Clay. He specializes in feet, and he really got his set up with with the right pair of boots and worked out nice for us.
Yeah, it's hard to beat a good, comfortable pair of boots. It definitely is important when you cover 100 miles. Gosh, you probably just about wore through a pair of boots.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. The fleet system, what fleet system did you take?
They had the Stone Glacier tent, and then it's a new tent that they just made this year, two-person tent, and we actually both slept in there. And then, what bag did you have, Kevin?
I took the KU, 15 degree bag.
And I had the KU 30 degree bag, but I took the liner that went inside of it that made it closer to a 15, like Kevin's.
Okay. And did you guys have a stove? Does that Stone Glacier have a stove in it?
No, it's, just a synthetic double wall tent. Quite a bit of room for a two-person, you know. I've owned several tents over the years where dang sure wouldn't want to put two people in there, but, you know, we slept comfortably for 17 nights in that thing, and, you know, I'm not going to say we had all the room in the world, but when you're on a sheep hunt and you're very weight conscious, it worked out really good for us, and it's a really roomy two-person tent, and Probably stayed warmer in there with two bodies in one tent than it would have single person anyway.
Yeah, one of us cut pretty much 4 pounds, 5 pounds out of our pack with us sharing it. Chase carried the tent, and in return I carried a spotting scope of equal weight. So that worked out really well, being able to split one tent. We had a lot of people told us not to, and you won't like it, but yeah, that tent is really nice and worked out perfect.
You get to be pretty good friends when you're all cuddled up like that, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. When you're hiking that many miles a day, there's not a lot of conversation. When you get back in the tent, there's just mostly snoring.
Yeah.
I could only imagine. Probably wasn't. Yeah. Not a lot. Good night, and that's it.
Yep.
So, I'm pretty sure I know the answer to this already, but as far as camouflage goes, what'd you guys wear?
We both took KU. I took their new Pro Pant that they had just come out with, and that was a big thing. I've never been on a hunt like this. I mean, not even for 2 or 3 days. And then to go planning that, and I was talking to Chase and telling him what I was thinking about taking, and he's like, oh, I'm just taking one pair of pants. And that, to me, I just couldn't register that, thinking they're going to be just a wreck. But it panned out, and it was awesome. That KU stuff, sure, I mean, the way the systems work together was just phenomenal. You're warm, you're cool, you're just everything. You're dry. That stuff's amazing.
Yeah, having the layers is really important, and that whole system, the whole KU system works really well together with base layers and the pants and the outer, the rain jackets and everything. It all. I think the only thing I didn't wear KU was darn tough socks, but other than that, the whole system was KU, and I typically go for solids. I wear a lot of solids, and KU makes a fair number of solids these days. And then, a little bit of Verde camo mixed in there.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to ask that too. Do you guys have a packing list that you created for that, a checklist?
Kinda. It's kind of thrown amongst a million text messages.
Yeah, we've got emails and texts, and I think I've got some kind of gear list kind of scribbled down somewhere in there, for sure.
Just curious. That seems like a lot of gear to try to keep track of. I know the way my mind works, I'd have about 10 different checklists tagged up all over the place. And shit. I guess after you guys, you hunt so much and you pack so much that it's just normal. I need this thing, I need this thing, and you just pack it and go.
Yeah, we had something towards the end there that had all of the weights broken down in every piece. But I, like Kevin said, I don't know if it's all on one sheet or if it's broken into a bunch of text messages. But at some point, we knew the exact weight and the exact amount of everything we were taking.
Yeah. Well, Kevin mentioned glass a minute ago, mentioned the spotting scope. I'm curious, what do you guys take on that?
We ended up taking this last 95. We, you know, wanted to get the best film and best images that we possibly can. And that was the first scope that came to our mind. I was a little hesitant just on its weight, you know, not knowing what to expect and how much our pad, it was all overwhelming to me, but Chase kept, saying, nope, we'll be good. And we took it and we ended up having a friend of ours build us an adapter for the Sony point shoot camera that we carry, the RX100. And, it was awesome. We got some great pictures and some great video through it. And, carrying a 5-pound scope on a backpack hunt, when we got there and pulled it out, our guide looked at us and was like, holy cow, but pretty soon you saw him, he's sitting closer to us and it's like, hey, can I look through that thing? And I'm pretty sure Andrew's gonna have a Soro 95 in his pack here pretty soon.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah,
and
the amount of hiking we did, it was definitely nice to have that scope. You didn't have to go that much closer to the animals to judge them. One thing I screwed up on my binos, you know, going on other northern trips and knowing that it's not super hard to see the white sheep up there. I just took a pair of 8x32 binos, and which was a mistake because with the amount of snow we got, it proved really hard to find these sheep. And, I was kicking myself. I took the 8x32s to shave a little bit of weight. And, definitely wish I would have had my 12x50 Vortexes that trip. I asked Kevin, I was ready to throw those binos off a cliff a couple times because the 8x32, you know, if it would have been a little earlier in the season, you know, those would have been fine and you'd have picked sheep up and then thrown the spotting scope up, no problem. But as soon as that snow hit, I realized what a mistake it was to take such small binos.
Yeah, and we actually almost got, in all the planning, we came up with an idea of taking one pair of binoculars and a spot scope, and then whoever, you know, flip-flop from day to day, and whoever's not carrying the binoculars, carry a camera to make sure we took a battery for each day, so we're like, we gotta burn a battery a day, get all the footage, all the pictures we can, so if we both have binoculars, we're both gonna want to be glassing. And thank God we both took binoculars, because like Chase said, when it snowed, it didn't just snow, it kinda was real drifty and dirt patches, and it was incredible how hard it was to find those sheep, and thank God we both took binoculars, because we probably would have missed a lot more than what we found.
And what were you carrying? What was the good pair that you took?
I took a pair of 10x42 Swarovskis, and then Chase took those 8s, but we definitely were both wanting 12 to 15, something a little more higher magnification, because when you get up high, the 10s weren't quite enough. They were just enough, but we got some pictures you guys will see in video of some sheep that Chase saw them. They were, I don't know, within 1,000 yards and was pointing straight across from us where they were. There was 5 or 6 rams. And me and Andrew, the guide, literally could not find them for several minutes, and we're just panning and looking. And then once we saw them, it was like, holy cow, this is going to be tough.
I'm sure it is. Like you said, I can only imagine early in the season when that rock is all gray and light brown, they pop out, you know, but when there's snow, all you can really see is the hooves and horns, right?
Yeah, and the snow, if it would have just snowed completely and just covered everything with snow, you can follow on their tracks. You can glass up a set of tracks, follow them one way, and if it doesn't lead to nothing, follow another way. And we found quite a few sheep that way, but the way it was melting off and the way it was laying, you couldn't follow the tracks because it would hit a rock pile or a dirt pile or a grass pile. But when you finally found those rams when they were bedded, it was like, man, this is, you know, who knows what we're overlooking or what we didn't see because of how the snow was.
Interesting. Well, we talked about your bow a little bit. What bow did you take? Did you take a carbon PSD?
Yeah, we did. We took the new carbon PSD bow, which I think all decked out. I mean, we were minimalist with it, but we had a Whisker biscuit and a lightweight fixed 5-pin sight. And, that bow was 3 pounds, 11 ounces total with the everything we needed to shoot. It didn't count the quiver. The quiver and arrows, you can add another about a pound, but, just the bow, the way it is, was 3 pounds, 11 ounces. And we were shooting, you know, good 6-inch group at 60 yards with it.
That's a cool bow, that carbon shell. That's nice.
Yep.
And then your rifle, let's talk about your rifle a little bit, because that thing, that's a pretty sweet rifle.
Yeah, we've been shooting proof rifles for several years now, and I built that rifle, I want to say 4 years ago, and kind of built it specifically for these mountain hunts, and it's a 6.5 Creedmoor, and with the 20-inch barrel, so it's shorter, it's easier to carry through the brush and carry on the pack and everything, and topped it with a Vortex scope, and I think total it weighs right about 6¾ pounds. It's a small little rifle, but it's super accurate, and it's been on a lot of hunts and shot a lot of animals with it.
Do you also have a 28 Gosmer proof?
Uh-huh, yep, that's more my elk gun, larger game. Just Kevin and I both shot our bulls with it last weekend, actually. And yeah, it's kind of, to me, the perfect combo. You know, the 6.5 is a really good deer sheet, you know, backcountry type gun, and then the 28's a little bit heavier, but it packs more of a punch, and it's better for the larger stuff.
Very good combo. Okay, so why did you guys choose Arctic Red River?
Cody Vorman's, the guy I originally booked it with, he's good friends with Tavis Molnar, the owner of Arctic Red. And, you know, you talk to people that have been there and done it and talking to Cody a lot. It's about as remote as it gets. I mean, there's still a lot of Alaska that's really remote too, but, you know, on our sheep hunt, on Jay's sheep hunt in Alaska, you know, we still saw other hunters, we saw other plains, we saw, you know, it's public land up there, so, you know, anybody, any resident can go, and then there's other guys that have a concession. But when you're talking, you know, like the ultimate getaway as far as not seeing other hunters and just the remoteness of the area, Arctic Red and a couple others up there in Northwest Territories are about as remote as it gets. And so talking to Cody and Tavis, and I met Tavis at the expo in Utah and talked to him and got it booked, and it was more about the adventure and the logistics and the planning and the getting there than anything. And, proved to be, you know, what we were looking for in a hunt, and Northwest Territories offered all that, and it didn't disappoint. I mean, it was everything we'd hoped for.
Well, I'd love to hear about each one of the individual hunts if we got a few more minutes to talk about them a little bit. Do you guys have a few more minutes?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, good. So, Kevin, it sounds like you shot yours first. Is that right?
Yep. Yeah, I think I killed on day 4, in the field, day 3 of the hunt. We had, from the time we landed and got dropped off, we had camped, I want to say twice, 2 different spots, I mean, but, we had seen some rams down this big drainage, We would just, and that's kind of, you work each drainage, you know, you don't just run down there and look at those rams. You kind of work and pick the country apart and each drainage apart as you head towards, whatever you're, you know, whatever direction you're headed and rams you're seeing. And the one day we worked up into a big cut and saw some more rams. Chase flashed them up way in the back of the canyon, And our guide, Andrew Walker, had actually been in there last year and harvested a ram up there with his client. So we knew there was rams in there. There was, I want to say that day we saw six or seven rams, had some weather move in, so we went back to camp. And then the next day, you know, hoping weather permitting, we got up in there. We still had some weather move in, but I think we saw three rams that morning. One ram looked really good, had some weather move in and lost sight of him. And then when the weather cleared, he was gone. So we made a plan to just hike up in there and get at their level on the same ridge and just kind of, you know, slow hunt it, looking around each corner and down each drainage and, spent all day. It was a hell of a climb. To get to the top. And then once we got to the top, we found the three younger rams. And it was, I want to say it was getting towards, I think it was getting dark around 10:30. And it was around 6 or 7 p.m. We were working kind of the top of the ridge back towards camp. We were going to drop off and hit a trail down towards camp. And Chase had looked back and glassed up three rams feeding where we had just came from, probably a mile behind us. And they were on the opposite side of the ridge from camp, but they were feeding up. So him and Andrew threw the spotter down, looked at them, and could see that there was a shooter in it. I was fumbling around trying to get some camera batteries changed. And never really, I got just a short glimpse of them, but I didn't know what we were looking at the time. So we took off across the ridge. It was getting real windy. You could see there was a bunch of weather moving in. It actually, I want to say it snowed on us a little bit on the stalk, but we got up above them. Andrew peeked over and they had actually bed down right below us. They were 100 to 130 yards. There's three rams. So me and Chase got up to them Andrew got the spotting scope and he's looking through, you know, aging the ram, and he looked back at us and told us it was at least a 10-year-old ram. Chase then looked at me and said, it's up to you. You know, you're up to bat. I killed the ram. But in my head, I just knew, you know, Chase had booked that hunt a long time ago. And, you know, I just had the short amount of time. So I told him, you know, we kind of had a little discussion. That's what's cool. You know, hunting with your friends is, you know, we think the same and we're real level headed and we sat there and talked about it. Chase looked through the spot scope and I told him, I said, it's in your hands, man. You make a decision if you want to pass or not. And, got to look at the ram and, he's like, nope. He's like, it's all yours. So got the camera set up, got in the gun and, I just remember asking that guy, I was like, man, is he on a fence? Cause I'm gonna shoot him in his bed. I'm gonna try and just keep him right there and not let him get away or fall. And he fell about 600 feet off the wrong side of the mountain. And, I think that was right around 8 o'clock. We got down to him at 8:30 and, got him cleaned up, got back to camp at 2 a.m., the next day. So it was awesome walking down. It was just, man, all the emotions just pouring out. Steep country, blizzard. It was just incredible. The hike out, we were out of water. You know, me and Chase were eating snow on the way up the mountain. It was just something that I'll never forget. It's burned in my brain. Every step I can remember. So it was awesome.
That just sounds incredible to me.
Yeah, that was one of the longest days of hunting I've ever had. I mean, we started super early, and like Kevin said, we didn't get back to camp until 2 a.m. or so, and we were definitely wobbly-legged and trying to stumble our way back to camp with heavy pack, but it was still you know, as tired and as beat down as you are, it's still an awesome feeling.
It's a long way from, you get that long way from Arizona feeling, I'm sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Much different environment. Gosh, it'd be incredible.
Yeah.
Cool. Jay, how about yours?
Yeah, so after that, right, I mean, I think as soon as Kevin pulled the trigger, the snow set in. And, like I said, we had to pack him back up the mountain and all the way back to camp. And that night, you know, hiking through all the snow, and it just kept snowing. I remember waking up the next morning and just being like winter. I mean, just snow everywhere. And we ended up camping there and caping the head out and, getting everything taken care of on Kevin's ram, and then decided we needed to get down to the river to where they could land a Super Cub and pick up Kevin's ram. You know, that way all the meat stayed good and the cape and, you know, the sheep was taken care of. And so that's what we did. And the next couple of days we worked our way and, you know, made our way down to the river. And I think, was it 2 or 3 days later, Kevin, that the plane came in to pick up your ram?
It was like 2.5 days when it got there.
Yeah, so we made our way to, it was actually the Arctic Red River, and just a neat, big, wide river bottom, and we went down and started making a runway, and got a runway built, and plane came in, and that's when they dropped off our second half of all of our food and stuff and picked up Kevin's ram. And from there we were, you know, still seeing sheep in this river bottom, and Kevin actually glassed up with the spotting scope a group of rams way off in the distance, down, or I guess it'd be upriver. No, downriver, sorry. And so he glassed those rams up, and we could tell one of them was pretty good. And I guess there were two groups of rams. There were how many, Kevin? 4 in one group, and then another group of 3, maybe?
Yeah.
And one of them we could tell was a big heavy goose, a long, like, flaring out type ram, but just far enough away you still couldn't judge them with a 95, so they were miles away. And we ended up moving camp closer to those sheep, and as we did, one of those days, that was when Kevin was saying those sheep were 1,000 yards across from us and hard to find in the snow. That was that first band of ram, and ended up being what we thought was a heavy-based, you know, really pretty ram, but he was only an 8-year-old, so we chose the passing, and we're going to move on looking for that longer ram in the other group. And ended up glassing him up again. Kevin found him again, and he was at the top of the mountain, and the fog was just rolling in, and we only got a couple looks at him for maybe 10 to 30 seconds, and before the clouds just moved in and we couldn't see anymore. So we made a big plan to hike up this big mountain the next day, and we did. We hiked up and took a big hike up into this basin, and they just must have slipped out on us because we never found those sheep, and looked and looked and looked and, you know, found other rams, but never found that ram we were looking for. And we kind of tore this whole mountain apart, you know, looking at other younger rams that we didn't want to shoot. And then, I don't know what day it would have been, maybe day 8 or 9, we decided to cross the river and go into another mountain range. And tell you what, crossing that river with that much snow and the weather that had been in there, we pretty much stripped down to our undies with our river shoes, and boy, that stuff's cold. And so we ended up crossing the Arctic Red and going to this other mountain range and set up camp a little higher. And we're setting up camp, Actually, we started glassing, and right away, Kevin picked up a ram feeding in the rocks, and it ended up being the ram that I shot. Well, I stayed there and watched him through the spotting scope while Kevin and Andrew set up our camp, and they quickly set up camp, and we decided to go after this ram, and next thing you know, we shot another ram before, a little before dark, and we're packing another ram down the mountain, and yeah, what day was that, Kevin? Would it be 10 or 11? I can't remember.
Yeah, it was, I think 11.
11, and yeah, so it's all kind of a blur, but yeah, I ended up finding him, and he's big, you know, he's a tight, curly ram, and curls all the way around on one side, and brooms on the other side, and just a neat ram, and shot him at a little over 300 yards straight across, and where he fell, if he'd have moved another 5-6 inches, he would have fallen off of several hundred feet, just straight cliff. So it ended up working out where he fell on top of the mountain, and got some neat pictures, and got to see some cool country up there. And yeah, by day 11, we were tagged out on our sheep, and it was time to go look for some caribou.
And how that, did you guys get a caribou?
Yeah, I did on day, was it 14?
Yeah, I think it's day 13, maybe. I can't
remember. Yeah, we got cases, ran down and moved down to the river, and then had to wait, I want to say a day, because of the weather, got picked up, and it picked up the ram, and they actually moved us north where they've been seeing a bunch of caribou, and where they're kind of migrating to, and dropped us off, made a new camp, had to wait 12 hours, which was actually the rest of the day, and then that next day, we made a push up into a big basin where you can overlook a lot of country, and it was awesome. Saw what, 4 or 5 moose bulls, bunch of caribou, and then just found one that fit my need. I mean, it just, I was there for character. Case grabbed the bow, I had the camera. The bulls had kind of been running around chasing each other, they're kind of goofy. I felt like antelope, what I saw. Him and another bull kind of peeled off by themselves. So Chase grabbed the bow with the plans of shooting with the bow, and I'd film. And then if it didn't work out, we'd just flip rolls, and I'd grab the rifle. And we got to 70 yards. And the bull he was with, it was a super thick, what was that, the alders?
Yeah, yep.
Yeah, just hard trying to get through there. The alders were 4 or 5 feet tall, and he ended up hearing us and kind of had us pinned, and he ended up blowing and got the bull up. The bull I ended up shooting, so he flipped back and handed me the bow. I handed it to the guy. The guy was following us. Andrew was following us with the rifle, and I gave Chase the camera, stepped up. The bull gave me a good shot at 100 yards. And that was that. We were 4.5 miles from camp. And, yeah. First caribou, and got back to camp right before dark. It was awesome. It was awesome.
Was that with that 6.53 more also?
Yep.
Wow.
Yep, our guide ended up just carrying a bear spray. So Chase carried the bow, I carried the rifle, and Andy carried the bear spray. So yeah, everything we did was with that, 6.53 more.
Awesome. That's such a good little round.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great round. And those caribou, I mean, they're good sized animals, but I would say that they're just a little bit bigger than a mature mule deer. I mean, wouldn't you think, Kevin?
Yeah, I was envisioning like a young, cow elk, you know, just pretty good size, but not huge. I mean, we packed them out, all the meat, head and gait, between the three of us back to camp. I think we got back to camp in like an hour and a half. We had 4.5 miles. So they're not as big as I was anticipating.
Kind of long-legged, lanky animals.
Yeah, I was thought they were like an elk. I guess a little smaller, huh?
Yeah.
You mentioned bear spray. Did you guys hunt into any grizzlies or any bears like that?
We saw, what did we glass up? Two?
Three.
We saw the two far off, and then so we killed my caribou, got back to camp, and had all the meat. You know, we passed the meat maybe 70 yards from camp, had the horn and the cape under the tarp, you know, in between our tents and whatnot. And then the next day, opened the plane to get in there to come pick it up, and then weather moved in. We were sitting up on a hill right above camp. We were 400 yards from camp and sat there all day. It snowed. We actually chased last up some wolves. So he was looking for a caribou or a wolf, and once we saw the wolves, we kind of switched directions just watching them. But snowed all day. We just sat under one tree all day long, cooked some backstraps on the fire, and right at like 9 o'clock, we've seen Chase blast up a patch of snow where it looked like something had walked through, so we were wondering if it was a moose. And in the back of our heads, we all know, we were like, oh man, it's going to be a grizzly. And pretty soon it got up, and it was 400 from us. The camp was 400 yards, and from us to the grizzly was 700. And the wind was blowing from the grizzly to camp, so we were sitting there watching it, and it was a slow, quiet walk back to camp with everyone thinking, you know, what kind of night we're going to have with everything's covered in blood. We got all the meat and the cake and this monster grizzly, 1,100 yards from camp. So I know Chase fell asleep pretty quick. I did. It took me a while to fall asleep. But when we woke up in the morning, that's when we moved to, it was like 400 yards from camp, still eating roots, just doing his thing. So it was that was the closest we ever got to any encounters.
Yeah, if the wind was different, I think you'd have been in camp that night.
Yeah. Wow. Did you carry a sidearm at all, or just bear spray?
I just carried the rifle. Our guy carried bear spray. I don't think you're allowed pistols in Canada, right, Chase?
Yeah, a resident might be able to, but you can't have U.S. citizen, you can't take a pistol with you to Canada.
Okay, yeah. Got it. Man, what an awesome 14 days. Sounds
great. I mean, you know, I've been in the North Country a couple times, been lucky enough to go on a moose hunt and a bear and a sheep caribou combo last year, and every time it's just amazing, but it was pretty cool to see. Look on Kevin's face and see some of the stuff that he was seeing for the first time. It kind of brought it back to me, like my very first time seeing it. And, you know, I don't want to say any time's less, but that first time you get to experience the North Country is pretty special. So I think I got some cool expressions from Kevin on camera and stuff, and it should be really neat to see in season 5.
Yeah, I'm really, really looking forward to it. What's the release date for season 5?
We're shooting for March 1st like we did last year with season 4. It kind of gives us a little bit of time to catch up on the editing, and it's kind of that, before next season to where, you know, I think people enjoy to see a little bit of hunting content right through there without, you know, there's not much of a hunting season going on, so our goal is, and also we kind of finish up our Arizona hunts in February. You know, deer season ends January 31st, and then we're hunting javelinas into February, and then it slows down a little bit for us, which allows us to get in the editing room and kind of get some of these put together. So March 1st is our goal.
Certainly. Oh, did you say you're leading it off with the sheep hunt? Is that just gonna open it up?
We have to decide what we're gonna do. I mean, if we go like season 4, we will, and it'll be chronological order. Arctic Red's it is the big trip for season 5, and we're trying to decide if we do like a little bit of a teaser from Arctic Red in the beginning and then save some of it for the end, or if we do it just all chronological. So that's something we're trying to decide on, and, you know, either way, it's all going to be in there, but whether we put it at the beginning, at the end, or both, we'll see.
Now, there's one video from season 4 that I thought was absolutely incredible, and I'm curious if there'll be another one this year, and that's your shed hunting video. Are you guys going to be putting
another
video?
Oh, man. It's possible. I mean, it's, you know, we, as you saw in the first video, we take it really serious, so.
Yeah, there was, it looked like there was a lot of planning and preparation put into that one.
Yep.
So funny. Yeah. And I'm going to leave it at that. So for people listening, make sure you look up that shed hunting video. It's pretty impressive. Yeah. Well, thanks, guys. Anything that you guys wanted to touch on before we close it up?
We're going to have to do another one of these with all the other hunts we got going on this year.
I'll tell you, I think you're absolutely right, because there's so many things. We probably could have made this about a 4-hour podcast, I think, just with everything you guys are involved in and stuff. But there was definitely things I wanted to touch on for a first one. So we'll do another one of these days when the schedules slow down.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. We've enjoyed talking to you and had a lot of catching up to do for sure.
Yeah. Yep. With that, do you guys want to be contacted or anything, or just Mountain Project? Is that your main point of contact?
Yeah, you know, our website, you know, all of our contact info is on our website, themountainproject.com, and it's the MTN project, not the swole word mountain. So you can Google it, though. You can look up the Mountain Project. And there's another guy out there who makes videos on how to grow weed and all that stuff. So make sure you don't click on those.
Maybe you guys need a merge.
Yeah, right. Right. Exactly.
I'll put a link to your guys in the description at the bottom, so it'll be easier to find.
Yeah, and like, you know, I know you and I have talked about gear and other things before, and I mean, anyone's welcome to contact Kevin or I on our personal, you know, Instagram or Facebook pages as well.
Okay. And what are those?
Mine is @Chase_Christopher_. There's a couple, I know it's kind of weird, but there's a couple of Chase Christophers on Instagram. And it's funny because I know the other two Chase Christophers, and we're always laughing about how people get us all mixed up, and it's pretty funny. But yeah, mine's @Chase_Christopher_.
Okay.
Yep, and mine's on Instagram, it's @Kipper, KIPPER 2012.
Okay, great. I'll put both of those in the description also. So, all right, guys. Well, thanks for coming on, and sorry, it took us so long to do this, but it had to happen at 4:00 in the morning Arizona time, but
yeah, sorry we've had to cancel a couple times, but it's good to finally get on here with you.
Yeah, cool. Well, thank you guys very much, and we'll wrap it up right there.
All right, thanks, Chad.
Yep, thank you very much.
All right, well, I wanted to say a special thanks to Chase and Kevin for coming on and sharing their stories and their fantastic stories. Someday I absolutely hope to be able to hunt up in that area. Just listening to them talk about it, I was picturing this beautiful picture in my mind of just the rock faces and the sheep, you know, climbing on the rock faces. Someday maybe in the future. But anyway, that, like they said in the show, that sheep hunt will be out around March, or at least that's when they're going to launch season 5. In the meantime, go back to YouTube, catch up, watch all of season 4. Lots of videos out there for season 4. They did a lot of day-by-day stuff. And then they also have a season 4.5 where they do a few hunts in the spring. So check all of that stuff out. I said I was going to talk about the giveaway a little bit, and I will. The giveaway is, an opportunity for just regular hunters like you and me and everybody else, not the big Insta-famous guys that we get on these podcasts a lot of times, but just regular guys and gals to submit their hunting stories over to me. And then myself and a couple of friends of mine are going to go through all of the stories, and we're going to select our favorite archery hunt and our favorite rifle hunt. And those both will be chosen as the winners. And the prize package that they get is, first and foremost, you get to be a guest on the Backcountry Rookies podcast and come on and actually tell your story and, you know, share it with everybody that listens. So you get that. You get a set of Vortex Viper HD 10x42 binoculars, which are fantastic binoculars. When I got the two sets for the winners, I got an extra set for myself, and I was doing some testing with them and playing around with them on a Audad sheep hunt that I did recently. And then I also did a pig hunt recently there where I was using them. And I'm just totally impressed with those binoculars. Every time I get them out, I'm impressed with them. So really good quality. You get $250 to spend in the Go Hunt store. So if you go to gohunt.com, go into their store or shop, I can't remember which one it is, but basically it's their shop where you go in and look at products and check out what they have. Those guys have a lot of really, really good quality products. They do a lot of work to put quality stuff on their website. So it doesn't count toward the insider program, but you can use it toward some gear that you were going to buy in the first place and then kind of shift that money around and use it toward the insider program. So look at it that way. And I highly recommend that insider program too. I've been using it for about a year now, and I use it all the time. I'm constantly jumping in and reading about units and you know, looking at the weather trends, quality of animals that are in that unit. I mean, there's so much information that's in that insider program. It's totally worth checking it out. Onyx Maps, you get a one-year premium membership to Onyx Maps, which is fantastic. I've gotten to the point where I use Onyx everywhere I go. Anytime I go out, you know, hunting anywhere, my Onyx is turned on and I'm tracking myself. And just, if anything, it's just to monitor how far I've walked in a day. So it's a really good program. This hunt that I'm prepping for, actually, as this thing launches, I'll be out in Arizona doing a bunch of scouting for a mule deer, coos deer hunt. And I'm using Onyx right now when I'm scouting and doing online scouting. I'm using it to drop pins on water sources and things in the area where I want to be hunting at so that I know where those are at when I hit the ground. So anyway, Onyx Maps, you get a one-year premium membership. You get the Mountain Hunter Box, who a good friend of mine, Derek, who was just on the last show. He'll be donating a archery box and a rifle hunter box. So obviously the archery hunter gets the archery one and the rifle hunter gets the rifle one. Both of those boxes were really good quality stuff. They were full of good quality products. So they're both sitting there waiting, and Derek's going to ship those out as soon as the winners are announced. He's going to ship them direct to the winners. And then lastly, the Backcountry Hunters and Anglers just donated a few products too. So big thank you to those guys. It's a nonprofit organization, as many of you guys know, protecting our public lands and our waters, and they're just out there fighting for all the things that we love. And so even as a nonprofit, they were able to donate a few items to the giveaway. Got a baseball cap that says public landowner on it, and then a cool neon green water bottle that says public landowner, and then a sticker that says keep public lands in public hands with the American flag on it. So real cool stuff coming from BHA. And I really appreciate it, them donating that stuff. So next up on the show, the next program is going to have Chris Horton from Elk Addicts. He'll be coming on and talking about some of the successes that he's had in the past and some of the lessons learned that he's had, and just really talking about hunting and where Elk Addicts came from. And then we're going to get into some gear talk too. So look forward to that one. We'll have a special guest host, I guess, that'll be coming on too. And that's Jeremy Ansel. You might remember Jeremy from an episode that we had, I don't know, 5 or 10 back. I don't remember what number it was, but Jeremy was on talking about the last, you know, 4 years that he's been a backcountry hunter. So, yeah, Jeremy's going to be a guest host. And the reason I asked Jeremy to come on is him and Chris Horton actually hunted together in Colorado earlier, or in the second rifle season. So those two hunted together, and I thought it'd be kind of fun to bring them together on the podcast so that they could talk a little bit about their experience hunting together. And then, you know, we'll talk to Chris a little bit more too. So, and lastly, I just want to say special thanks to Sportsman's Nation Network. As I had mentioned before, Dan is doing a lot of work to help me get this name changed, and I really appreciate that. And he's done a lot for all of us over here on the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network. So thanks, Dan, and thanks to all the guys that are on the Sportsman's Nation Network. With that, I think that's it. I know that was a ton of admin and information. I tried to save a lot of it till the end. So that's it. Thanks to Chase and Kevin, and look forward to Chris Horton coming on. And thanks to all you guys. Keep listening. Out of here.